Hi, I'm Lori Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place for women in their second half of life to go to receive inspiration. If you are at a place where you believe your best days are behind you, it is my hope one of these episodes will spark you to think differently and lead you to a new belief that your second half may actually be your best half. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that the younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age or circumstances hold you back from the pursuit of a more fulfilling and fun life. The happier we are, the better the world will be. So instead of settling for what you don't want, how about going after what you do want? Listen in and let something you hear prompt you to take the first step in making the rest your best.
Welcome to another episode in my Lessons Learned series of Living Your Spark Second Half. And if you're on my YouTube channel, you probably see a different background. I am sitting in my hotel in Sedona, Arizona. I've been here for a retreat and it's been amazing. Although I haven't been able to enjoy Sedona much, it's been very cold. So I've been holed up also in my hotel room working on this new training. I'm getting ready to deliver in early January, or actually it's later January, but I'm working on that and I'm excited about it. But I decided that this episode would be about a breakthrough that I got in this week at the retreat. And it was suggested that it would be a good episode by my coach. So I am delivering this to you based on his advice. But also, I like to share what I learned because my lessons are something that if you find value in, I think the lessons I go through apply to almost everyone, especially women my age. And so anything I can do to help you with learning through my lessons, I'm willing to do that. This is going to be a vulnerable one, because it's about a childhood trauma that came up. And it's funny how my personal beliefs have been what I realized in this uncovering is that I never thought I had a childhood trauma. I actually had a pretty great childhood. I had parents who loved me. We always had our needs met. Went to good schools, had animals that I loved, and even a horse. We really didn't want for much. And my parents were teachers, although they went to graduate school and became my father, an assistant principal, and my mother, a guidance counselor. So they were very well educated. And we're truly middle class, lived in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. So I never really thought I had any kind of trauma. And when I think of childhood trauma, I think of children who were abused or who in some way, shape, or form, whether sexual or emotional, or that they just didn't have their needs met, had struggles in ways that a middle-class child wouldn't. And so this was something that really taught me that we all have some kind of trauma in our life. And trauma is often suppressed, and we are through the suppression, it's usually blocking us in some way that we can't even see. And so if you are feeling that for some reason you're being held back in life, that you want something that hasn't been attainable, or you're going after goals and for whatever reason you can never achieve them, or you keep hitting up against a wall of some sort and can't seem to get over it, whatever that may be that you desire on the other side, then there's probably something going on, and we are usually unable as individuals to find it. It's just blocked from us. It's in a blind spot. And that's what I have loved about having a coach, is that he's able to show me my blind spots. And this was definitely a blind spot, and it was quite eye-opening. So I'm here because, and it's a very intimate retreat. My coach has a large program. So he has lots of people come through his program. He opens it once a year. It's called Business by Design, if you'd like to look it up. He also has a podcast called Mind Your Business. And I've interviewed him on my podcast. I'll put the link to that episode in the show notes, but I highly recommend him just to listen to his podcast because he always has amazing insight. And he's a business coach. So he teaches people how to create online businesses, digital products like courses and coaching programs and that sort of thing. And so he's been my coach for 4 years. And I have, of course, in the pandemic, we weren't able to attend in-person retreats, but part of the mastermind I'm in, we get retreats. And so they've been virtual this past year. I've been able to go to two other retreats, and these in-person retreats are really, it's where breakthroughs happen. Let me put it that way. You can get breakthroughs on Zoom, and I have gotten breakthroughs on Zoom, but being away from your day-to-day and being with like-minded people and having a coach who supports you and guides you, and prompts you, because he always has really great content in these retreats, you know, breakthroughs come usually very easily. So what happened to me this past week was really the culmination of a previous breakthrough. And so this retreat is very intimate. There were only 10 people here in person. We had two on Zoom because they couldn't make it in person, but very intimate because I won a contest. The people who were here all have won or been finalists. I didn't win, but I was a finalist, and he gave all finalists of this contest this retreat. And so it was kind of like a runner-up prize, but it's certainly like I won, and because having him in a room in this very intimate setting was highly valuable, because we got very individual attention. And so that's the reason I am here, and with just a handful of people. And how it was formatted is normally that when he has a retreat, he has a full agenda with content planned. This was kind of like what we, you know, individually needed. So it was very ad hoc, I guess you would call it. And how he started it out was that he asked each of us who was there, and we all have online businesses, what we wanted out of the 2 days. And so we all had different reasons. Some wanted business advice, and others had to work through some block they were having. And that was where I was, working through some block that I felt I had. And so in this process of me wanting to dig deeper on this breakthrough that I had earlier in the year, this childhood trauma came up. So what I had uncovered earlier in the year was through a inner critic exercise he had us do. And I now teach this because it was so valuable for me. I took my students through it. But the inner critic exercise uncovers the thoughts in your head that I call negative Nelly, that the thoughts that I think I actually did a podcast episode on this, but they uncover the thoughts that are keeping you, are critical of you. You know, it's this like, you know, if you want to say, and the angel and the devil are on your shoulders, and the angel's always the supportive one, the devil's always like, you know, the mean one, and, you know, saying things that hurt your feelings and telling you you're not good enough and you're not worthy and that sort of thing. That negative Nelly in your head is your inner critic. And so when we went through that exercise back in March, I actually got some downloads that I was like, really, like, wow, I'm surprised I didn't, like, this hasn't been uncovered before. And a lot of the what was uncovered was stuff that I kind of knew where it stemmed from. And so what I uncovered, though, was that I had a really high need to feel valued. And we all do to a certain degree. In fact, there's three basic human needs, and they are to be loved, to be valued, and to be safe. And usually one of those stands out for somebody, and it stems from something back in their childhood. So, but I thought that I had kind of worked through kind of the value thing, because for me, a lot of the value stuff is related to the fact that I didn't finish college and that I never completed my degree. And so I went into the workforce, and once I became very successful and I started getting promoted and became a vice president at AOL, I never felt worthy of that title, because I always thought of myself as like not the brightest person in the room, because I was sitting in rooms with people who had gotten graduate degrees from, you know, Harvard and Stanford and all these business schools. And here I was, not even graduating from college. And so we tend to be hard on ourselves, and our inner critic gets in our head. And so that was something that I always related and understood, that I had this high need for value. And I often felt like an imposter in the room because I saw myself as less than and not smart enough. But I've worked through that, because I know, like, I'm smart enough, and I know I advanced because I was smart enough and all that kind of stuff. But we still have that little inner critic inside of us when things come up in our lives. So that's a little backstory I wanted to give you, is that when I came into this retreat, I knew that there was still something that was keeping me from stepping into my full potential. There was something that was related to value, and me not seeing my true value, that was holding me back, that was limiting me. And so I am going to share what came up, and it was pretty shocking to me. And it was caused tears. There were definitely tears, and I'm not a crier. So that was kind of, it was good though. Tears aren't bad. And it was kind of a release. And it was also kind of recognition, I would say, for that little girl that had that trauma. And our trauma can be caused by our own brain, our own self, and our interpretation of conversations and, you know, our surroundings and experiences we have. It could be nothing that anybody did or said to us. It's just something we experienced and internalized. And that is what happened to me in this case. So I have notes. I'm looking at my notes to make sure I don't forget anything. So when it got to me, I stood up in front of the room. And what he's so good at, and what coaches usually do with you, is they start and ask you questions. And I knew I was in a safe place, trust all these people. I know them from other retreats and being on calls with them. So I was completely vulnerable, and I knew I had to be to get to the root of what was causing this issue in my life that's holding me back. And so he started asking me questions, and of course the first question was, you know, what do you want to, what's your intent with this, retreat, and what would you like to get out of it? And I said, I want to get to the bottom of what this value thing, why I can't, you know, show up and step into that my full potential that I know is there, and I'm just holding back. And so he was asking me questions, and one of the key questions he asked me is, when I have these thoughts that I was sharing, he said, how does that make you feel? What does that mean? What does that make it mean to you? And when you have these thoughts, it makes your thoughts make it mean something about yourself. And so when I answered him, because the answer was really imposter, because if I don't feel like I have enough value, and I feel like I don't have the intelligence or the experience or the knowledge, or if I feel like I don't have all those things, even though I have evidence of it, but those are the thoughts that are going through my head, then you must feel like an imposter, right? And so that word came up, and I was like, I feel like an imposter. And then he said, when was the first memory you had of that? And it's funny, because when that question gets asked of you, your first thought is to rack your brain to find the right answer. And the right answer is really the first thing that comes and drops into your head, because the first thing that comes to mind is really a download. It's something greater than you that's dropping that nugget, I will call it, into your psyche, because it knows. It's your higher self trying to communicate with you, because your higher self knows. Your higher self has all this memory of that childhood trauma. And so what came to me was, I said to him, I was 8 years old. I know. Actually, I told him I was 7, but then he made me write the story down. So the memory, as I recall it, was very vivid, and it was of a incident in my third grade class. And so I just briefly spoke of what happened. And so he stopped me, because I had identified this moment in time and this experience. So he said, go down to the table, go back to the table and sit and write the story out. Write the story out as you remember it. So I had to go do that. And then he came back to me after I was finished writing my story. So my story started, it was, and I when I sat down to write it, I was like, oh, I wasn't 7, I was 8, because I was in third grade. And I remembered I was in Mrs. McMillan's third grade class. We called her Mrs. Mack. And one of my classmates' father died in a hunting accident. And it was very sudden and very tragic. And it was the first time in my young life that I ever experienced death, or at least like death of somebody that I was in my circle, right? I didn't know the father of this girl, but she was my classmate. And so it affected her. And it was, therefore, I was like, it was very close to me in terms of it wasn't something like I just heard on the news. And so after that happened, I couldn't stop thinking about death. I started to have thoughts constantly about death and me dying. And that's a big burden for a little 8-year-old to carry and not know how to handle. My mother probably should have gotten me therapy, but back then, therapists weren't something that you really did unless you were really bad off, right? So I remember I started thinking about how if I died, that it wouldn't matter. And I had this thought that if I died, the only people that would ever care were my mother and my father and maybe my sister on a good day, maybe, but on most of the time, she probably wouldn't care. So it was really an overwhelming feeling of, and I remember it so vividly now that I remember feeling in my body this like disregard that I was like so insignificant and so unimportant that it wouldn't matter if I was there or not. And so that was really a scary feeling to me, to know that there was this big, wide, huge universe with so many people in it that didn't really give a shit about me, that didn't even know me. And maybe that was my soul at some point saying that, like, you're meant to do bigger things. You have a purpose. But as a little 8-year-old, it just scared me. It just scared me to think that I didn't matter. And so I started to really obsess about this, and I started having OCD tendencies. And it's funny, I didn't even remember this until I started to write the story, and it all started coming back to me. But I would had OCD so bad that I couldn't close a drawer or a door on an even number. If I opened a drawer and closed it, I'd open it and close it again. If I opened a door and closed it, I had to open and close it again. I mean, that's kind of like odd behavior for a little kid, but that's how much my thoughts occupied me. And in terms of breathing, I remember like I couldn't breathe out to somebody I loved. I mean, this is like crazy, right? And I couldn't breathe in to somebody I didn't know, because it was like I would get some bad like luck or bad juju or something. Like if I breathed in, like to a stranger was there, and I'd go and I'd exhale to like get all it out, so I didn't breathe in their air. I know you're probably thinking I'm like nuts, but I want to tell you this because I think so many of us might have had things like this in our lives that we've just shoved under the recesses of our brain somewhere, and our dark recesses of our brain somewhere. And I wouldn't have uncovered this if I hadn't been insistent on getting to the root of what's holding me back. What is it that is making me hesitant to step into my full potential, that I know I have more potential in me, but there's something holding me back. And so I also remember that I started to ask my mother questions. I asked her 3 questions every night. The first question was, do you love me? The second question was, will I live till tomorrow? And the other question was, and I'm trying to remember, those two I'm pretty certain of. The other one was something like, am I going to die? So they were all around validation, and you know, fear about death, right? So my mom would come in and she'd, you know, be very patient answering my questions, you know, yes, I love you. No, you're not going to die tonight. I know what it was. It was, will I live till tomorrow? And am I going to die? And so she would come in and she would just go, yes, yes, no, or yes, no, yes. And she, that's how, like every single night, it was like a ritual. I had to ask those questions and I had to get her to answer. And so she just got tired of hearing them. And she would just come in and say, yes, no, yes. Which also for me was kind of invalidating, because I needed to like ask. And so it just was so sad for me to think that I spent so much of, and I don't know how long it lasted. I know my OCD lasted for a while, but I eventually outgrew it. And I, and of course stopped asking the questions at some point. But now my mom, she's in a assisted living and she really can't communicate. So I can't even like go and ask her and talk to her about what her memory is of that time period. And of course my dad's no longer with us. So, but this is something that came up and, he worked through the story with me in the way he does. And of course, like as I had to read it really slow and I had to take breaths after each sentence. And when you do that, it really makes you process. You almost go back in time to that, like feeling like that little girl and experiencing that all over again. And then when all was said and done, I felt almost like healed from that. I felt like I, you know, that little girl, I like was able to understand her. I was able to kind of give her a hug in whatever way that's possible in my mind, and to tell her it's okay and it is okay. And I think a lot more people would care if I died now than my mom and my dad and my sister. And they won't because they don't even know me. So anyways, my sister and I, we are somewhat estranged, I would say. We don't really communicate much at all. And then, like I said, my mom's in assisted living, my dad's not here. So it would be other people that would care, like my children and my grandchildren and my husband and all my friends that I have now. So anyways, I thought that this would be useful for you to hear because I think it's important to share that childhood trauma can exist in many ways. It was funny because while I was processing that story, my coach referred to it as childhood trauma. And it was like, I kind of was almost at a double take. I was like, you know, I was like, what? Childhood trauma? And then I realized, oh my gosh, yes, it is childhood trauma. I've been carrying this around, suppressing it, and it's harming me now, even though it wasn't conscious, because it is keeping me feeling insignificant. It is keeping me feeling undervalued and like a blip in the universe. That none of us are blips in the universe. We all have unique and special personalities, characteristics, and reasons for being here. And they're all very critical to the world and making the world a better place. And so it's important that we understand that these things exist and they can be uncovered and healed. And so I wanted to share that. So tomorrow I head home on my airplane, on a airplane, not my airplane, but the airplane I'm flying on. And I had to move my flight up a day. I was going to spend another day, extra day here in Sedona, but the weather is not good in the Northeast. And the flight that I was originally taking was going through a city that was going to be affected by the weather. So I got a message from the airline and they said, you might want to switch your flight. And so trying to avoid any kind of delays, I took another flight and they said they would not charge any change fees. And I think my husband is very happy because absence makes the heart grow fonder. And so he's eager for me to get home. So that is what I will be doing tomorrow. And I appreciate you staying on and listening to this story. I hope you got something out of it. Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Living Your Spark Second Half podcast. If you'd like to watch my guest interviews, you can find the video version of this podcast on my Not Your Average Grandma YouTube channel. Also, you can check out what I have going on at the moment by going to my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com or find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you like this episode, please mention it to a friend and don't forget to leave a review so I know the topics you like best and can bring you more of that content in upcoming episodes. Last but not least, remember to always listen to that inner voice that will never steer you wrong and make living from the most sparked place possible your biggest priority. When we do that, we make the world a better place.